Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. That's me. Ooh, almost caught me off guard.
Brian Brushwood.
True fact. These are all true so far. Can't vouch for everything after this.
Justin R. Young.
Hey, gang. It's me.
We started a conversation in Weird Things talking a bit about social media stories and how we interact with these things. And I think that Brian and I are kind of in the camp of like, well, we're entertainers. This better be for an audience or for a purpose. Would you agree with that, Brian?
Yeah. Although, not as a universal indictment of the platform itself.
More indictments on you and I.
Correct. Yeah. We are outliers in that. It's like, look, man, if I make my money from showing my mug and saying things I think, then I want as many people to see that as possible at all times.
Yeah. Versus, you know, Justin, who does both, but Justin has sincere, non-professional relationships with people, I understand. You know, people interact with.
They're called humans. I'm told they're great.
Sure.
Well, I mean, I think that it's partially my idea of the of at least my career is that there are kind of two elements to it. There's the like get people into the tent, and then there's the entertain people when they're in the tent and hopefully make money on them or hopefully have them want to spend money on you, right? And to me, although getting going on something like Snapchat or Instagram stories was hard, and I found that it is almost completely tied to my self-esteem at the moment. When I feel good about myself and my life, I post more and I do more and I think of things to do and say more. When I'm not, I post less, if at all.
Man,
seconded
on that, and that's a case even on a platform like Twitter where like that makes money because I say a thing and each one's a scratch off lottery ticket. One out of 10 times a lot of people retweet it, and then more people know about my stuff or whatever, and like if you're playing the game of gathering attention, that's an important thing to do. And even knowing that this is my F-wording job, it's just 100% tied to how am I feeling. You know, and when I'm not feeling it, it's really hard to want to talk and tell stories.
Yeah, I've been like last year, my Facebook usage, I went on there to go post that I have a new book. I've done that. Other than that, I don't know if I did I do any live streams last year on Facebook? If I did, I did a couple for live streams. That was it. I've not used it as a means to interact. I've not checked my Facebook email accounts. Instagram, I'll do Instagram minimally just to go like my friends sort of stuff to try to, you know, keep the veneer of a human. And then Twitter's more, I'll go say something on Twitter and interact with people. But I'm such a disengaged outlier in all of this.
Well, but also what you're describing as a disengaged outlier is pretty much, as best I could tell, the universally accepted norm for a novelist. It is not the norm for a cult of media personality, but it is the norm for being a popular novelist.
I know a lot of writers who are way more active on Twitter than I am. You know, George R. Martin, no,
I
Stephen
would,
King.
I would say, I think that in this day and age, a fair amount of the people that I see retweeted a lot primarily make their money writing books. You know, be usually fiction. Then again, I mean that just means, I mean that's like just the Twitter quandary of the fact that like literally everybody on Twitter is exponentially more important because everybody on Twitter or everybody in media is on Twitter. However that is, and so it's just reflected in news and movies and fiction and everything on such a large level compared to how many people actually use it on a daily basis.
I think I was thinking about the idea that there's sort of a delineation. There's social media and there's pro social media. And, you know, Brian, Justin, you guys are, you're professionals who make money on social media. You know, your engagement there is a professional level. It is really part of your job. Everybody sort of says, oh, social media is part of my job. But I know a lot of people at companies, if your company didn't tweet for a year, you would be fine. But you guys, it's very much. And I was thinking about part of the problem that some actors and people have with social media is that they start off with their friends and then they get fans and this is cool. And then when they get criticism, it's hard for them to deal with, where we come from places where like, no, we've had hecklers. We've had this. We get it. We walk into a room. Not everybody's going to like what we do. And we've already developed sort of the, you know, the immunities to that. But other people haven't.
Yeah, it's rough. I had somebody in my timeline today was retweeting a director of a movie that is in theaters now that literally just had to be vanity searching the name of the movie or vanity searching his own name. He wasn't tagged in it, and he just lit up this dude for not liking his movie. And it's like, part of it is, I mean, the point that that the guy in my timeline was making is that like Twitter is the place where many celebrities find criticism, right? And because it's the only mm-hmm. place in which they can easily go seek it out, you know?
a wise man once explained all of Hollywood to me as, you're great. Oh, this is amazing. This thing, it's the biggest thing ever. It just isn't right for us right now, but you're great. Everything you do yeah. is great.
You're the best. Oh, God. If it were for the idiots upstairs, we would all be gigantic superstars. So,
you know,
I'll tell you what, I might kill him. Okay. I might kill him after lunch.
True fact, I wanted to come into this meeting wearing a T-shirt with your face on it, but my boss said no. He said, if you do that, you're fired. And I said, well, then consider me fired. And then he said, but I'll also kill your family. And that's the only reason I'm not wearing it now.
Yeah, I love my family. I think we all agree on that. Something that I love you about.
Everybody loves everything. And I had an exchange recently with somebody I know who wanted me to take a look at something. It's like, yeah, it's in development at such and such studio. Now, last I talked to this person, they were talking to a production company that was on the lot at the studio, but it wasn't in development there. And I'm like, when I tried to be polite about it, I'm like, well, wait, is it in development at this studio, your project? And he's like, no, but they're taking it to the head so-and-so who really loves it, and it's fast-tracked. And
what I meant to say is the situation is developing with this studio.
And I understand this point of his enthusiasm. I get that. I've been there. But it was like it's part of it, too. It's like if you've never been to really had a thing in Hollywood, you don't know how to read it. When they say we love it and they're excited, they want to see it, that's what the doormat says when you walk in the building. We love this. You're special. You're excited. We can't, if they don't say that, you know, worry, but that's the normal. That's the hello in Hollywood. We love this. We're super excited and we want to make this thing happen. And so I watched kind of this and then how that to his mind was, well, that's as good as it being already optioned, already in development and fast tracked at the studio. You know, yeah. it's like, it's partially the wishful thinking and partially this mentality in this town. It's just this, yeah, everybody loves everything.
Well, because it's a relationship town.
Yep.
So the one way you know you can fail is by insulting somebody, right?
Yeah.
You always want them to believe like, oh, no, 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 I'm your best friend. Because at the point that you're valuable, I want you to know I thought you were amazing.
Yeah. So I think I think that's part of the problem with a lot of celebrities is everybody's kissing their butts. Everybody's telling them this. Then all of a sudden they go on Twitter, type in their name and they see this. And then, you know, and it's just funny. The idea of a director getting upset and deciding to engage with somebody who did not like their thing.
It was Adam McKay. And then he accused somebody of ignoring the Iraq war because he didn't like Vice.
Oh, wow. That's funny. That's
or at least I don't know. It was a screen grab, so I'm assuming it was real. But
yeah. Okay.
Meanwhile, there's something too, like old fashioned showbiz folk, where it's like we're broken to begin with, which is why we got into showbiz. We show up on street corners where people tell us we're garbage, and we're like, I know, but I also think I can fool you with this dollar bill trick. and then somehow Twitter comes along, and it's just I don't know. It's I mean, not that all social media hasn't figured out how to get each of our individual goats at some point. It does feel like I think immunity was the word you used, Justin. Like we'd already built up the antibodies for that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that part of it is, you know, there is an element of being on the internet to understand when things become, you know, even if we don't learn the lessons, we know the tales, right? Like we all know, like, oh, I why are you still up? Someone on the internet is wrong. Like, we know that that's a bad instinct to have. Whether or not we heed it is a different story, but there is just some element of like, okay, well, this is productive, this is unproductive, and it's something that I very much like. If there's one thing that I want to work on, a muscle that I want to work out, specifically the further I get into the political world, which, you know, even though like my brand is literally, we all have points, let's discuss the points. Like, I'm going to eschew taking the like super easy hot takery because I'm committed monastically to trying to understand where everybody is coming from. Even then, it's like I was very excited because I realized that the podcast was breaking into a wider audience when I read some of my Patreon exit surveys after the midterms of why people were leaving, and it was just people disagreeing politically about stuff. And I'm like, okay, good. They came in for the midterms, and I'll bet you they'll be back for the general.
So resolved. Social media.
So let's move on to inboxes. Justin, did I hear right? We started recording, we're bragging on your inbox zero. You're zero.
7 days into 2019, Brian, and I have gone to sleep 7 nights in a row with my inbox at zero when I lay my head on the pillow.
That's cool.
That's how you're going to set us up.
Yeah. I mean, what you're describing is you got the Holy Grail, and that's certainly something that I
know it's me bragging about my digital abs. Like, I know that it's something that nobody wants to hear about. Nobody likes. I just, for me personally, it was something where I had slowly been working toward it over the last year, right? Like, I've been like trying to like periodically kind of eliminate it. And then I was over the holiday, and there was just a lot of stuff that, you know, I was able to kind of clear out. And I had those like pesky barnacle emails, like those emails that are like right down there at the bottom. And maybe they've been there for a while. And it's somebody that you really, and for me, it was an old friend of mine that I used to do comedy with that, earlier last year, I had just reconnected with him out of nowhere and was like, hey man, like let's do something. And it was like a cool back and forth. And then he had emailed me, and then it was just one of those, the longer it went, the worse I felt about it. And I just had to bite the bullet and just be like, I'm a butt. Let me answer all these questions that you had from a million years ago, just so I can get that poison out of my life. Of it staring at me and being a beacon to my inability to finish things. And now it's like, all right, you want to know what? Like inbox zero is way easier to maintain than it is to get there.
Yeah.
Because I was describing to Bryce, it's like, all right, periodically things kind of come in, but also it's like, it just forces you to think when you only have one thing, it's like, okay, does this go on my to-do list? Does it go on my calendar? Does it go somewhere else? But like, all I know is it doesn't belong here. So I can just get it the hell out of here, put it on my calendar, put it on my to-do list. 99% of them are that, or it's a quick email, even if it is just a push back at them to be like, all right, yeah, I'll get to that. But even then, it's like, to me, it's developed my ability. I'm a very, and I'm sure everybody on this call knows that sometimes I can take a long time to do things, and I can be lazy about it. And I'm trying to work out those muscles of like, no, you want to know what? Like, let me not just send the like, hey, what does this mean? Or like ask another question just to know that it's getting out of my inbox. But like, let me just look up the thing. I know that I could probably look this up in a couple minutes, and it's easier to do when I only have one of those instead of doing one of those while I'm looking at a bunch of other totems of my ineffectiveness.
I have two thoughts. And one is, I was thinking about this the other day, the idea of, you know, in software programming, we use APIs, which, you know, if you send a little, you know, piece of code to an, you know, Twitter's API, you know, you can post something on Twitter, or, you know, APIs are these sort of these gateways to do stuff. And I was thinking about the idea, if you had your own personal sort of API, you know, like, you know, an address or a URL or whatever, and ways in which you could, just for contacting or communication, because so much of what you want to do is automatic. So much of what you want to do is, I don't know, just I want all of my, you know, like the inbox thing tries to do, where it puts together all the promo emails and puts it in one thing. But I could direct all communications from Justin into something else. He could send me a text or an email, but it could automatically just become a text message for me. Or I could have a bot that reads this sort of stuff from unknown senders and responds to it. You know, getting into the idea of, you know, for close friends, is giving them, you know, special keys that encrypt their you know, communications and stuff. I'm just thinking, like, I don't know. It's a nebulous idea, but the idea of, if we want to get to the point where we have the AI butler or whatever that handles everything, we need to have control over it. It shouldn't be Google or Facebook deciding what gets through.
Oh God. Yeah, no, that would be amazing. If I could have something that I controlled, that it was like local to my phone and local to my computer, I would absolutely love that. Real quick footnote on the Inbox Zero thing. Part of it was, last year I separated separate emails for each show email. So like, all the jury emails go to a jury daily at Gmail. All the politics emails go to the Young American at Gmail. Periodically, I'll still get some stuff into my personal email, but I can just forward them. I know where they go. That's the only reason why I have Inbox Zero. Otherwise, I would always be lazy enough to not put it in the dock where it's supposed to go. I would always just leave it there until I absolutely needed to push it.
Yeah. Separate thought, like the whole... You know what? I do feel like 2019 will very likely be when I actually get to Inbox Zero, but it will be because at this point, I refuse to just hit mass delete on everything from 2014 and 2015. There is a mass 1,200 emails from that time that at some point I looked at and decided they were important enough that I shouldn't dismiss them out of hand. And some of them are ideas for episodes of Scam School episodes. Some of them are business opportunities. Some of them are garbage or whatever. But as I and my game is always to work my way back until what I think of as the back catalog. And then once I hit the back catalog, then just things breeze through, because it turns out half of everything is garbage that fixed itself and doesn't matter. And so I'll send a courtesy one-line response of like, hey, however did that turn out? And then people are thrilled to hear from me 2 or 3 years later. Now, I'm not going to say this is a good way to do it, but I am going to say that it is astonishing to me how little was actually of any import whatsoever once you have the distance of a year, 2 years, 3 years after the fact, and how much of our time gets swept up in that.
So you have all your Scam School and Modern Rogue emails go into, they funnel into your personal email,
past
or
tense,
is that a separate?
Past tense. Yes, past tense.
It did.
Yeah, but still, I mean, people know who the point of contact person is for each of those shows.
Sure, and it's sure, not sure. Hard but at to least, get but, my... But now you can see those and just hit forward to the appropriate place and then deal with it when you go deal with other stuff.
Oh, I don't even do that. Usually what I'll do is I'll see it. And if it's something that is like, oh, this is something worth doing. Oftentimes it's people trying to book me for a thing or get me on their podcast or whatever. And very quickly it becomes important where it's like, you know, I'm sure both of you gentlemen have had this where it's like you get booked on a podcast and 5 minutes into it, you realize, nobody's going to hear this. This is a fan who's thrilled to have captured my time and is just so excited for this hour-long conversation they're going to have with me that they really promise is an up-and-coming new property or whatever. So what I tend to do when it comes to getting booked on stuff is if I have the free time, sure, you know, go ahead and commit to doing it. But if I don't have the free time, I hand them the ball back and say, hey, really unlikely anything's going to happen this month. If I were you, I would say hit me up again in March. And then now that is a self-selecting filter where if they're serious or if – and by then, plus also half the time it's people starting a new podcast and then they don't even know if it's going to still – you know, I don't know if it'll still be around in March. But if they're if it's still going in March and they hit me up a second time, that has – orders of magnitude more weight with me and grabbing my attention and getting me all the way dialed in.
I hear you. And I don't mind, like, if somebody says, hey, I want to do a podcast, it's me and they're only their cats are going to listen. If I have time, I don't mind. I mean, so I do the Periscope sessions and stuff, but I never have the time. You know, that's my problem. It's like, I always try to give myself, like right now I'm writing a book. And I don't have – I have almost no commitments this month because I want to give myself time to write the book. Now, most of this time spent writing the book is going to be sitting around watching Netflix, thinking, well, what's next? What do I need to do next? All that.
I think the important thing is having a place that is the most effective place for them to put their energy. I forwarded over to Justin, you know, somebody hits me up with like, hey, I really need help on this. And look, there's no shortage of people who need help on everything. But it has been the biggest blessing to have an answer for these people to say flat out, the most effective thing for you to do is to post this in the Diamond Time segment of Night Attack. This is how you get it out to the maximum number of people. This is how you will have an impact because what you're because everybody thinks they have an idea like, oh, all Brian has to do is tweet it and I'll have the funding to make this thing happen. And it's like, well, that's not true, but I don't even have the time to explain to you how not true that is. And so instead, to have an actually effective place, unbelievably valuable to point them.
So here's what I would say to you. If I were to sell Brian on my new digital Marie Kondo philosophy of digital organization, you need to be diligent about pushing that. Don't deal with that in your personal email. If they know where to go and they're trying to cut the line, you need to push them to the line that they deserve to be, and you need to work on getting your personal stuff. This is just the stuff that is like inside your personal life and your home life. Get that down as low as possible, because once that is as low as possible, you will find yourself wanting to go and turn on career brain more, and you will wind up dealing with that stuff more. You will have, I think, the energy to go. At least for me, I found myself interacting with my other email accounts more once I have looking at zero on the thing that I built up so much tension in having like the fast twitch muscle fiber of like, okay, I got to do that. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, now I'm like, okay, cool. I've settled this part of my life. Now I can open up this other part of my life and I can now put the emails that I want to in the various docs that I need to, if I'm doing them for the shows, if I'm responding to people, then I can do that. At least for me, that is what I have found has happened over the last year since I separated everything, and more so now that I've gotten to inbox zero on my personal stuff.
I get those requests like, hey, will you retweet this? Will you put this out there? And it just made me think about what I had to do to get my first mailing list when I did wrote my first magic book. And Rand Woodbury, magician, good friend, great guy, gave me an email, a physical mail list rather, of everybody who had bought his books on magic. I spent a year working in his workshop, sweeping up the floor and feeding a mountain lion, which at the end of that, I mean, he wasn't like he held that over him. Like, why did Rand give it to me? Like, oh yeah, I used to feed his mountain lion when he was away on the cruise ships. I used to go clean his warehouse. I used to go do all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, No, I don't think I'd put anybody else to that amount of effort, you know, to get a retweet. But it is that kind of thing. Like, that's how, you know, I liked working with Rand. I learned a lot. But that's how much value I put on what he was able to do with me. It was like, yeah, I'll go do this crazy stuff for you. And he gave me an incredible launch. But sometimes we want things too easily. But, you know, don't be afraid to ask.
I think, yeah, that people will ask for things. People will believe that there is... You know, part of it is just grass is always greener, thinking that, like, oh, well, this person has all this power. This person has all this ability. This person has all this wealth. Like, all I need to do is ask and my problem will be solved. And, you know, to a certain extent, some of that stuff is truer than others. But from the perspective of the person who's getting asked, I think that there is a self-care priority to at least put it in a bin that is people that are asking me for things, or, you know, people that are.
And I think people, I think that people shouldn't be afraid to ask for things. Like, you know, there's so many things, opportunities that would have been mined for just for having somebody who'd gone, yeah. But I mean, like, imagine Brian, somebody says, hey, Brian, what can I do to get a retweet from you?
Man, that is more homework than I am comfortable with. Like, just the mere asking me to do an assessment of what it takes to get a retweet out of me is already a bigger ask than I have time to deal with.
Okay. Then what if somebody listened to you say something, you know, like, oh, if I go do blank for you, or if I did this, you know.
What are you getting at? What do you mean?
Well, Andrew,
you just hit it. Number one, if you want something from Brian, if you want to interact with Brian, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is the number one way that you can get a positive response, a quicker response out of Brian. If your email or ask, however you're going to do it, could be responded to with, sounds like work. For Brian, it will be time or never get answered. It like for every period that would be at the end of the imaginary sentence, sounds like work, ..
Oh, I'm the same way. I have people who want, like, I want to get an autographed copy of your book, and I'm like, I gotta go find a copy of the book in my warehouse, sign it, it's easy. I then gotta go open up a mail thing. I gotta go do this. I gotta go, like, and it's minimal. It's minimal, but for me, it's like, I don't do that. I don't do it.
Yeah. Look, if it's eliminate any way that anybody can answer that email, sounds like work. And if you don't know what that is, make that your 2019 resolution to understand what is work for other people and what is you doing the work yourself.
Oh, yeah. And you think about, like, how I didn't post that we're doing a live stream on, you know, we're doing this live stream right now. I didn't tweet that out because I was too lazy.
Yeah.
And even though that could have brought us a couple dozen more people to watch this, I didn't have a button to press to do this. And because there was no button to press, I didn't do it. Now, it's kind of on me to make that button, but I never bothered to make the button because I'm too lazy. I won't even promote my own stuff.
It's a fascinating thing to figure out part of it, I think, is just our own psychology, our own self-worth and where we believe other people are, right? That we tend to think that others have far greater reservoirs of effort, wisdom, self-confidence than we do. And to rely on somebody else is like, oh, well, surely you can spare whatever, you know, the X amount of money to my PayPal, the Y amount of time to go do a thing. Cause it's like, Andrew, you saying, oh, can you sign this book? It's like, man, if I ran out of contenders here, right? And I had to go get a contender from the warehouse that we have, or the little storage area that we have down the road, it's an hour and a half. It's an hour and a half out of my day. And it's going to be at prime time when I could be doing other stuff. Like, that's, you know, by the time you get in the car, go drive, do it, go to the post office. That's a lot of time.
Yeah.
So the answer is yes to ask. Also realize what you're asking.
Yeah.
Look, how bad do you want it to happen? And that's the key. Like, I think, and this is the link that we all have, is we understand that humans are self-interested creatures. And so we are not saying that self-interest is bad. Your self-interest should be, do you want an interaction? Do you want a favor? Do you want a leg up in your career? Do you want all these things? Congratulations. They are there for you. And I think the three of us have enjoyed working with people. I think, you know, for all that Andrew and Brian have given to me in my career, I very much enjoy giving to other people. And I just, you just need to do it. Do it in a way that any of us will do.
When I see a name I recognize, you know, somebody who's participated, it say, hey, you know, take a look at my, you know, my Kickstarter, my Patreon or something like this. I go look. And if I think they put effort into it, I more often than not will contribute. Sometimes if I can do it anonymously, I'll do that. I'll contribute it. I'm less likely to go retweet it because the failure rate on a lot of these things is so high. But
that's the one that breaks my heart is everybody thinks it's like, okay, look, I'm going to say no, not because I don't want your thing to succeed, but because what you're describing is quite literally the least effective strategy possible to get to what appears to be your real motivation, which is to get this thing funded.
Yeah. And I just, that's the thing. When I look at that, I'm like, did you do your work? Did you put the effort in? Did you, and sometimes I've been surprised and I, there's a certain threshold. I'm like, yep, I'll help. I'll contribute to this or whatever. But the other times you go like, this is a half ass. This is me going out and trying, I want money to write my next book. I'm like, no, I'm going to write it and then sell it. You know, like,
yeah.
It's cheap to write a book. I don't need somebody to try to fund this to do that. You know, I see some of these things where people have done that and I've stopped funding some stuff when I'm like, oh, wow, I've been paying every month this thing and they haven't made a single thing. And I feel a little, you know, I have like my Patreon, like I have a magic project thing. We made it. We only get paid if we release. We don't release, you know, it doesn't do there, which gets into, do we want to talk anti-fragile?
I don't know how much more time we got. I'm expecting a phone call soon, so I may have to bug out. But I do. I'm a big fan of Nassim Taleb's concept of anti-fragilism.
Do you want to give us your description of it?
There is in his book Anti-Fragile, he says, if I'm remembering correctly, that people think the opposite of fragile is robust. That's not true. Fragile is a glass. Robust is a hunk of rubber. You could bounce a hunk of rubber around and it's robust and doesn't lose its shape. There's a third category and we need a word for it. So he proposes anti-fragile. Your muscles are anti-fragile in that the more you break them down, the stronger they get. Your bones are anti-fragile in that if you don't break them down, they turn to jelly and like they do in the space station. And as a result, there are systems that are anti-fragile as well that become, and back to our opening conversations about social media, our ability to handle negative comments is an anti-fragile system. It only exists because it's been tested and pushed for so long that we have gotten stronger as a result of it. And if you take that part out of it, then you have what you were describing as the Hollywood scenario, where you had essentially an immune system that had never dealt with an outside contagion of criticism and didn't know how to work with it.
Yeah. So you think about if you want to certain, you know, businesses, certain careers, certain things like this can be robust or anti-fragile. You know, things that I like is build a thing around a mailing list. More people get on the mailing list, the more powerful the mailing list is. There's an optimum amount of times to use it and it promotes itself. Things, there's some businesses that like, oh, we're going to take out a loan to launch this thing and it's extremely fragile, could succeed or could not. And taking that approach towards going, you know, when we launched, I brought that up because we launched, you know, the Patreon for the Magic Project. I'm like, well, I want this. If we fail, I don't want it to create bad will. So if we don't create any content, nobody's getting charged. So nobody's going to go like, oh, you owe me money or you did this or you screwed me over. And that's, you know, kind of how to make something that's resilient or somewhat. And so it's, I think it's a thing to think about when you create something is to say, what will failure or what will instant interactions do to this? Will it make it crumble? Will it make it stronger? You know, a lot of early stage startups, better to go out there. We talk about this, the book Blitzscaling, better to go out there and do everything and fail. So you get that feedback. So your product gets better and better and better.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think I think that there is a tremendous disservice that you do yourself when you try to craft the perfect plan in your head.
Yeah.
And then it just, I think, boxes you in on so many levels. You would rather walk out there and be the butt of the joke and be bad, as long as you know. So it's like, even to everybody that we just talked about, that like, okay, they have a Kickstarter, they have a Patreon, and it's half-assed and it looks stupid. Guess what? Your failure isn't necessarily that you did that. Your failure would be if you didn't learn.
Yeah.
If you didn't look at that and say, wow, that was dumb. I shouldn't have done that. Or, wow, that didn't fund for a reason. Not because I'm this unique, original sin awful, but because the way I went about it was bad. The way that I presented it was bad. That's the key. It's like, there's no element of failure that isn't a lesson. Now, if you keep burning your hand on the same stove, then yeah, you're stupid. Like, stop burning your hand on the same stove. But if you do it, like, never worry about being the a-hole, being made fun of. Like, that's a lesson. That's a huge lesson. And sometimes when you fail loudly, it'll teach you more about stuff than if you succeeded accidentally.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Picks.
I've been reading a column that ran from 1935 to 1962. Did you know that Eleanor Roosevelt had a 6-day-a-week syndicated newspaper column from basically the election season, her FDR's first election season, his first reelection, right up through the 1960 election? 6 days a week. And it was called My Day. And it was initially just kind of like the peering into the life of the first lady. After Ike got elected, it became more political, and it eventually wound up getting dropped by Scripps Syndicate because it was too political, and it factors into the 1960 election, which is why I know it. But I've been reading Eleanor Roosevelt's columns.
Holy cow. Like, are they particularly good, or is it just strange and wonderful and weird to look into that period of history?
She was a very savvy political person. And by at the point where she starts sharpening up her elbows and starts trying to be a kingmaker, as the living legacy of, at that point, the greatest political dynasty. I mean, we will probably all live our lives not knowing a greater, longer American political dynasty than the Roosevelt administration. She was really smart. And she hated the Kennedys.
You know, and it's interesting too, is that, like, whenever I hear about a politician who writes a lot, I'm like, ghostwriter, 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 ghostwriter,
yeah.
Ghostwriter. Like, you probably can't name, most people, I would say, can't name a book by a current politician that they actually wrote.
Oh,
by all accounts, Eleanor Roosevelt wrote her own stuff.
Oh, she wrote it. They were not necessarily voluminous, but again, six days a week, that's like Dear Abby stuff. Like, that, I mean, that's an insane schedule.
Yep.
At the height, she reached 4 million people 6 days a week.
Wow. Amazing, amazing legacy. But, huh. How about that Twitter?
Yeah.
Look what I got.
Oh, what do you got?
The back of your shoulder.
My head. No, it's a, and see if you can recognize the sound.
It sounds like.
Man. What an amazing reveal this is going to be as soon as the camera.
Recognize the sound? Anybody?
You know, make the sound again.
It's a Rubik's Cube. It's a Brian. Commodore 64.
I'm going to knock on it now.
It's a door.
Something inside of it.
It's a Kinder Egg.
Mm-hmm. It's a Jack in the Box.
Maybe.
Is it a? Is it a? Oh, we've lost. Okay. Is it a pop up book? Is it a new pop up book?
No, better.
Better than a pop up. He likes pop up books too.
Oh! This is an amazing reveal.
It's the Houdini self.
Yeah, dude. Dude, have you solved it yet?
No, it does something?
Yes, it does. Inside, you'll find a collection of wonderful, beautiful goodies. All you need to do is unlock the secrets of Houdini's cell. Specifically, it's interesting. I get a lot of people tweeting me who have opened it, and people are brute forcing it. They're opening it first, then they're bothering to go solve the codes and find out what the answer was and why it made sense. It's like they wanted to lock in the ability to know the solution before they found out the story that led them there. I'll be really interested to hear your experience on there.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see if I have the patience. But
If you want a sub 20-minute experience, don't pretend like there's any joy in solving the ciphers on your own. Just go to a cipher solver, because even then there's hints and stories that'll lead you in the right direction. I would say it's probably a 15 or 20 minute experience for you to actually, quote unquote, you know, there's a difference between opening the box and solving the box. And I think,
yeah, I agree. I'm looking at this here, and there's some clues and stuff.
He's already solving it live on the air.
Hammer. I just realized there's Houdini on the back with a wolf over his shoulder. I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. I'm so excited. When you get a moment, let me know how the experience landed for you.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I think we could do next week, maybe I want to do a discussion maybe on After Things about the future of experience designers.
Cool.
Mm. Yeah. So that'll be the architect and game designer of the future.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. It's been After.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.